Welcome to In the Middle. I'm Joey Bullock. Definitely a busy week here as we get into the final stretch of the campaign cycle for the 2024 presidential election. Also, a lot of local races we're following in this state. Definitely going to be a monumental week. We're going into a monumental night where we're all waiting on the edge of our seats in anticipation of who will be the next president of the United States, as well as, much less, who will be the next senator of New Jersey. Now, obviously, a lot of the pundits out there say that Andy Kim has the advantage, but Curtis Bashaw is dismissing that, claiming that he's got a real shot at this thing. And, of course, we have the 7th Congressional District, where we're watching that tight race between Congressman Tim Kaine and activist Sue Altman. So we're watching all that for you. But we have to start off the show on more of a personal note for this show. I talked to you back in, I believe it was September, if I remember correctly now, late August, early September, where we got the news that In the Middle had been named a finalist for the New Jersey Society of Professional Journalists Excellent in Journalism Awards. So that was for Best Podcast. Now, we didn't know what to expect, but we finally got the results on that. That came down over the past weekend where it was announced that In the Middle got second place for Best Podcast. And everyone here, including myself, are truly honored by that award. So thank you to the New Jersey Society of Professional Journalists for that very, very prestigious honor. It's really a great organization that really is the guardrails for the press here in the Garden State. So we really appreciate them thinking about us and for bestowing the honor onto In the Middle. I mean, we just try to provide you with the best information we can every week based on the facts, not based on spin, not right, not left, just right down the middle. So this means a lot. And specifically, it was for the show we did with Jersey City Mayor Steve Fulop back in October of last year. And you might recall that that generated a little buzz because I asked him about the county organizational line and all that. And he basically said, oh, it's got to go, which broke some news because he had not said that before. He called it undemocratic, need to be abolished. And it's been history ever since. As you know, that whole line saga. Now more counties are settling when it comes to the county organizational line. We'll talk about that in the coming weeks here. But back to this, there are obviously a lot of people to thank. We're going to try and get to all of them. If I forget a name, I apologize. I am trying my damnedest to remember everybody who is involved or not. But if you don't hear your specific name mentioned, we have not forgotten you. We are grateful for the contributions that you have made for In the Middle. And of course, we have to start by station and operations manager Jack Myatt of Fox Sports New Jersey. Jack is the reason why I'm speaking to you right now. He's the one who gave me my shot on air and via the digital space. So Jack, thank you for allowing me to do this. We love doing this every week and we appreciate your support of the show. Jack's been very supportive and has fought to keep In the Middle alive for as long as it has. So we appreciate him. Also like to send a shout out to Mike Cohen, who helps with the website every week, makes sure that the show is looking good, gets it on, makes sure it's posted, that the descriptions are right. So we thank Mike Cohen for his hard work and dedication to this as well. Mike McGinn, the guy who actually, the backstory, I think I've mentioned on a couple of shows before, he is the guy who dragged me in to Jack's office on one, I believe it was January, yes, one cold day in January, because he thought it would be a great idea to move my college radio station show over to a professional radio station. And I have to thank Mike for that, for his support, because if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be anywhere. I would certainly not be interviewing the mayor of Jersey City, who is a gubernatorial candidate, breaking news that is informing people's decisions and the discourse in the Garden State. So thank you to Mike for that. Then also we have to thank Lauren Hoffman for her contributions, and she really helped with promoting the show and when we're getting started with it. So we thank her for that and making sure that social media was proper representing when everything was posted and everything of the nature. So we thank her for her contributions in that regard. Ginny Odie, we'd like to thank her for the production of In the Middle, making sure everything sounds good and clean, as well as for picking out the intro music for In the Middle. She played a large role in that, so we want to thank her for that as well. And of course, we could not go without honoring and acknowledging and remembering the late Tommy G. That guy gave me opportunities I couldn't have imagined on radio. He took me under his wing when I was starting off on what, you know, the former name of this, where this used to be on, you know, CTC. He really was a guiding force. You know, he allowed me to come on the show every week, allowed me to promote the episode of the week, what was coming up, who was coming on, and it provided me a lot of a space where I hadn't had before to just ablip and to think on the fly. And he even invited me and actually my mom and I down to his studio that's actually in his house, and we got to converse, and we spent a whole show talking, and, you know, got to meet his wife, and it was just really an honor that he would have me on as much as he did and gave me some exposure that really helped move the show along and gave me some pointers. So Tommy, we miss you dearly, but this award goes to you. So thank you so much for everything you have done. And of course, I would be remiss if I did not thank the family. You know, they're the ones who make it happen for you. They are the ones who support you from the very beginning when everyone else is like, who's that? They're like, that's Joey. We know and love him. So thank you, Mom, Dad, and my brother Michael, for your undying loyalty and support, even in times where they really were tough and were like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? And you were there for me nonstop. So thank you, all of you, for your support, whether it is listening to my shows every week or, you know, getting me through school or whatever the crisis of the day was growing up. I appreciate your unconditional support. It really means a lot to me, and I really would not be anywhere that I am today without that support. So thank you for that. And of course, we have to thank Fox Sports New Jersey for allowing us to do this each and every week, to be on the air, to be on the digital space. We thank you for that and for the support, especially, you know, given when we started Fox Sports New Jersey, weren't sure what our role would be. And immediately when we found out that we were going to be a podcast, that really was incredible and really beneficial to us. And also want to thank Beasley Media, for providing a platform to put out this content, to provide local dialogue around politics, as well as a place for where candidates can stop and provide insight on what they want to do in their jurisdiction, whether it's running for mayor, running for Senate, running for House, President, you name it. We've had probably about just about almost every position you could imagine in the state you're running for has been on this show. So we really thank Beasley for being so supportive in that realm. And we hope to continue this partnership for years to come to bring exciting, compelling, yet informative content to our listeners each and every week. So congrats to everybody on that. Thank you to all the friends, family, co-workers that I didn't mention. Your support is amazing. And of course, you, the listeners. How can I forget the listeners? You guys are what keeps me going every week, quite literally. If you weren't listening, they'd be like, Joey, you got to get out of here, man. Nobody cares about you. So thank you for supporting me over the years, whether it was in college radio, whether it was originally when I was on the radio, or it's now where we're in the digital space, whether it's the comments, the listenings, the likes, the phone calls, etc. You are the ones that keep... We do the show for you. We don't do it for us. We do it for you to inform you so you can make the best decisions when you go to the ballot box each and every year. So thank you for sticking with us here and for diving in with us to all exciting topics every week, whether it's governor's races, whether it's in-depth policy discussions on immigration, the economy, you name it, you are with us. And we thank you for taking the journey with us, and we hope you stick with us. I mean, we have a busy election cycle, so we have that, but we hope you stick with us well beyond that as well, because we have a governor's race coming up in a year, and there's a lot of consequences that are going to come from that, and it's going to be anything other than boring. So stick around to this show. A lot to talk about. And speaking of which, we have to go to the news of the day here, or news of the week, depending on how you want to phrase it. There's a lot to talk about here with this story. You might have heard about it, generating a lot of buzz. Former White House Chief of Staff John Kelly is calling former President Trump a fascist. In an interview with the New York Times, Kelly was read the definition of a fascist and was asked if Trump met the criteria, to which he responded, yes. Kelly said Trump, quote, certainly falls into the general definition of fascist, for sure, close quote. In an interview with The Atlantic, Kelly recalled the former president raising the idea of needing, quote, German generals. Specifically, he said Hitler's generals. Trump pushed back against those allegations on Truth Social, saying Kelly, quote, made up a story, and went on to claim his, quote, toughness morphed into weakness, close quote. Despite this, Vice President Harris repeated Kelly's assessment at a scene in town hall, saying Trump would be, quote, a president who admires dictators and is a fascist, close quote. When specifically asked by town hall moderator, CNN anchor Anderson Cooper, if Trump is a fascist, Harris replied twice, quote, yes, I do, close quote. So this story is an interesting one considering the timing. That's what you're hearing a lot of people talking about. That, yes, the content is certainly something that generates a lot of buzz, but it's the timing. That this interview was done 2 weeks, the initial one with the New York Times, and obviously The Atlantic is the follow-up, 2 weeks before an election. A guy who spent a significant amount of time with the former president, given the fact that he was the former chief of staff at the White House, but also before that served as Homeland Security Secretary. So he was in Trump world for a solid period of time, and he saw a lot of stuff. But it's important to know here, this isn't the first time Kelly has spoken out against Trump. He's the guy who told the story about how Trump allegedly said that people in the military and who died were suckers and losers. So there's that part of it too. And there is a questioning of the timeline of why now, why not earlier was this done? Now, there's a couple of theories you could say around that. But if you were looking at from an Oppo research standpoint, you would think now's the time, this would be the quote-unquote October surprise that you wanted to hit while there is a neck-and-neck race happening and that Trump is gaining a little bit of momentum and you're trying to put the nail in the coffin there. You're trying to stop it at its heels and you're trying to flip the race towards Harris. There is that school of thought. But there is another that this may not actually do anything at all. Now, why? Some of you may actually be saying this, and no fault of your own, maybe saying, who is John Kelly? Because it's a guy you haven't heard from in a long time, wasn't really a big mouth when he was in the Trump administration, and also just isn't really a household name. You just don't really know the guy, John Kelly. Now, I do, as someone who follows this every day and has been following this for years, but many people out there don't know who John Kelly is. So it's possible that Kelly may not actually be able to nail a coffin in anything. But then there was also the hesitation of, okay, if Kelly just hates Trump that much, why isn't he backed Harris? Well, Harris has a history of attacking Kelly specifically on the family separation policy, as he was the mastermind behind that one. She has criticized him openly on that and now is trying to align with him when it behooves her to have an argument against Trump. So there is that aspect of it too that the Harris campaign is trying to nail, that, you know, all these national security officials who are in the Trump administration are now coming out against Trump. There's even ads about this too. Mark Esper, the former defense secretary. Then there's also James Mattis, who has come out against Trump. Mike Pence, who ran against Trump and refuses to back him in his current reelection bid. So that's the Harris team's message. If you're Harris, you want a nail in the coffin. This guy is bad for national security and for foreign policy. Because if you look at the polling, Trump is currently leading in that category, specifically as it revolves around the Middle East. And that is expected to be a major challenge if he gets reelected. And also the war in Ukraine, China, North Korea, you name it, foreign policy is a top of mind issue. For Trump, you have to disregard, if you want to move past this, disregard Kelly saying, well, you know, he's not really in the fold anymore. No one really cares about him. And this is all made up. The media is lying to you. That's what you need to push. That you're the guy who can do this. You've done it before. And all these Washington insiders are out to get you. The enemy from within. That's the messaging, which that's a twofold message system. Because if you look at the critics of Trump, they're saying, oh, this is toxic rhetoric and he's going after Democrats. But his supporters will say, no, he's calling out the people in the government that need to go, that he wants to bring in fresh new faces who are going to act on the behalf of the American people. Which argument will win? That's a question. Now, have we seen significant polling data in the last few days to really prove this is doing anything? Not substantially. But we haven't, in defense, we haven't really had this specific issue polled. But if you're looking at national security and foreign policy more broadly, we have not seen any major development on that front. But we have not specifically asked about Kelly's remarks. But it does largely resonate with Democratic talking points that Trump is Hitler, Trump wants to be a dictator. These are all things that Democrats have talked about, and Republicans have largely tried to duck, or at the very least have, you know, pushed back against and said, no, this isn't true at all. So that is the thing. Will Kelly really make an impact at this point, given also, early voting has happened, and so many people have already voted at this point that it may not matter. Remember, that was the case from the autopsy of the midterms, is that it didn't matter what happened in October in some of these races because so many votes were already in the bank that didn't matter. It was more than enough to overcome the margins in between two candidates. I mean, look at Pennsylvania. Dr. Oz thought he kicked ass in that October debate with now Senator John Fetterman because Fetterman completely blew it. He looked like he was not sharp, that he was weakened, that he wasn't quite up for the job. But he got so many mail-in votes, by the time that debate happened, it didn't matter. It did not matter. And we'll see if this is the same thing, that the October surprise may not be enough. And some people are saying this isn't even an October surprise because it is dominating news coverage, but not in the way that some of these other October surprises. It's not the Hollywood Access tape where that was a major bomb. Every news channel, wall-to-wall coverage, Trump having to defend it, apologizing for it, in fact, people calling for him to get out of the race. You're not hearing a lot of that, and you're not hearing a lot of major defense, too. I mean, you're getting, obviously, they're pushing back against the Trump campaign, saying, yeah, this is a bunch of nonsense and all that, but you're not really seeing it consume their time, not dominating the news cycle more than, you know, than the coverage it's getting. It's not the only story out there. There's still other things being discussed, but it's certainly a bigger one, but it's not the end all be all because there's all these other stories you've been hearing about too in regards to things Harris has said, things Trump has said, you know, Trump attending all these events and doing all this campaigning, and then J.D. Vance having his town hall with News Nation. There's other things at play here. And those are factors we're going to be watching as we go into this election cycle. But again, the presidency is not the only thing on the ballot. Congressman Andy Kim and real estate developer Curtis Bashaw faced off for the final time in their third Senate debate. Now, the debate, hosted by News 12 New Jersey, was more like a forum, per se, not so much a debate. But it featured much of the same that we saw in previous matchups. Bashaw calling Kim an out-of-touch D.C. insider, and the congressman saying the real estate developer is your run-of-the-mill, typical Republican who supports Trump, and even accusing him of shifting his stance on abortion. So there's that. But not everything was the same as the previous ones. There are some differences. Follow along here. So Kim also criticized Bashaw specifically on donating over $60,000 to GOP county chairs during the primaries and supporting the organizational line. As you know, Andy Kim was the guy who filed the lawsuit that ultimately had it tossed for the Democrats this year and is now triggering all these settlements going on across the state among county officials, basically saying, okay, we're just going to do office block voting unless the state legislature comes up with something else. So that's the criticism being levied there. Now, Bashaw is pushing back against that, claiming he would vote independently if elected and that he's his own man. He has a mind of his own and that New Jerseyans think for themselves. They don't necessarily go along the general line of thinking of follow the leader. So that's what Bashaw is saying. He's even putting ads on TV about it now, how he's pro-choice and a gay man, but he obviously believes in securing the border and fiscal responsibility and cutting taxes, that kind of stuff. So Bashaw is trying to distinguish himself as not your average Republican, while Kim is trying to define him as, no, this is the same guy who's running on all other 49 state ballots. He's just trying to play the game. Now, on the topic of immigration, Bashaw challenged Kim's record on the issue and suggested that there needs to be more federal immigration judges to deal with a $3 million case backlog. That's an argument you've been hearing from a lot of people. Now, really, this is all about the immigration judges and saying that, you know, he's been in office all these years and he hasn't really done anything about it. Well, Kim, on the backside of that, says he supports a secure border. But you may recall from the previous matchup that the guys basically were challenging each other on this, and Bashaw said and asked him, have you been in that border? And Kim was kind of flobbering a little bit and basically said, no, I didn't go. So that's the remark that Bashaw is hanging his hat on. And immigration played that role in this debate, and they also talked about Israel too, where there was someone questioning how they viewed the war in Israel and Gaza, and Kim basically saying that Israel had the right to defend itself, but then we got to take all these things into consideration. And then Bashaw saying he unequivocally supports Israel and questioned Kim's stance on that issue once again. So a lot of the same as previous debates, kind of a wrap-up of what's going on, but these are really the closing arguments for these guys, because this is crunch time, because mail-in voting's already happening, early voting starting this weekend, and the election is a little more than a week away. So they are cementing their messaging, sticking with what they have going. And as you probably can tell by now, they both have the strategies of what to do. For Kim, it's paint him as a Trump guy, talk about how great I would be for the state. I'm going to be a fighter for the state. It's time for a new era of politics. We need to get rid of the corruption and talk about the key Democratic issues that resonate in a state like abortion. That's the Kim strategy. If he sticks with it and, you know, kind of plays the middle of the road stance on the border, because as you know, in New Jersey, New Jerseyans are kind of moving a little to the right on this issue. They want something done. They want the mass deportations. That's according to recent polling that we've seen out there. A majority of New Jerseyans want that kind of stuff. They want secure borders. Then he's also kind of got to skirt around the economy, because obviously high costs in New Jersey. He's just got to skirt around it. And if he gets to all the issues he loves talking about, then he can bring in the victory, because as you know, Republicans don't typically win Senate elections in the state. It hasn't been done since Richard Nixon won re-election in 1972. So it's been a long time. For Bashaw, he's got to defy the history here. He's playing the strategy of, I'm a different kind of Republican. I'm a Curtis Bashaw Republican. Yeah, I believe in the traditional things like cutting taxes and securing the border, but hey, you know, I'm not tied to the social policies of the GOP. I'm a gay man. I got a husband. So I support gay rights. I'm pro-choice. I like the idea of a woman having the right to choose, and I'm certainly not going to do anything to change that if I'm in the Senate. For Bashaw, he does have to play that line, because he's got to get the Trump people out. Because as you know, that was a struggle in the primary. Yes, he did win it, but only by 8 points. Remember, the Trump people, a lot of them split between the other candidates, particularly because Trump endorsed his chief rival, Christine Serrano Glasner. And then also, there are other people who didn't really like either one of those two, so they voted for the other candidates. He's got to bring them all home, because that's key, because there are more registered Democrats in the state than there are Republicans. Now, that's kind of shrunk over the years. It's under 1 million now, but there's still over 900,000 more Democrats than there are Republicans in the state. So he's got to bring in the home base. Then He's got to bring in different people. He's got to bring in unaffiliated voters. Large demographic in the state, a large voting block that could prove to be the make or break for him. If Bashaw can peel off enough of those voters, get the Republicans in, and maybe even bring some disaffected Democrats over to his side, then he might be able to form the winning coalition. Right now, that's still to be determined. There's not much polling on this race, but from what we've seen, it's close. It's really tight. And we'll have to see if they will be able to get over the finish line, the Bashaw campaign, and really tighten that to keep it tight. Or is it like when Bob Hugin ran back in 2018, where there are these polls showing he was in striking distance, and then he lost by almost 11 points. And that guy had even more money than Bashaw did. So that's the question for the Bashaw team, is can they do something that hasn't been done in decades, or is it going to be more of the same? That is the question we're going to find the answer to. But here's what we're getting in the middle of this week. We're a little more than a week out from Election Day, and early voting starts here in New Jersey on Saturday. Residents from across the state have already cast their vote via mail-in ballots. Now, current estimates put that number at over 500,000 ballots have already been cast and returned. Isn't that crazy? 500,000 people, over 500,000 people have now voted in this state. And that's before early voting kicks off here. And that's not all of them. It's right now, it's about, there's still 50% of the mail-in ballots that still got to come in. There's still half of them out there. So we could get over 1 million ballots just from mail-in alone. And then you got early voting into that. And that's going to play a factor too. Now, the highest number of vote-by-mail ballots is coming from a place you may not expect, the 1st Congressional District. What's the deal with that? Well, the 1st Congressional District is home to a race that many may not seem as competitive or really anything on the face of it. It's traditionally Democratic, and the district hasn't elected a Republican in decades. But that could change if family drama makes its way to the voting booth. Democratic Congressman Donald Norcross is seeking re-election against Army veteran and attorney Teddy Liddell. The congressman's brothers, this is where the drama intensifies here, George and Philip, are now, they've been all caught up in an indictment on racketeering charges brought by the state attorney general, Matt Platkin. Liddell says he has a unique shot at winning this race and bringing in a victory for the GOP that the party won't see coming. Well, joining me now is the candidate himself, New Jersey 1st District Republican congressional candidate, Teddy Liddell. Teddy, thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much, Joy. Thanks for having me.
Let's revisit where we are now. Since we last spoke, your opponent's brothers, George and Philip Norcross, have been indicted on 13 racketeering charges. Congressman Norcross has not been indicted, nor has played any role in the alleged activities. Given all that, how has this indictment changed the dynamics of this race for you?
Well, I can tell you how it has impacted me on the campaign trail while meeting so many people ever since I decided to put my name in a hat and run for this great office. People are saying that they would like change, that they have heard the many stories about corruption, not just in New Jersey, but just across the country and closer to home. I mean, we've heard about the New York City mayor and then up north, New Jersey with Senator Menendez. And then close to home, as you mentioned, with George Norcross. Look, I think the bottom line is people do not want a politician to represent them. They want a public servant to represent them. And what this really means is somebody who will seek to create a positive difference in our lives, who cares about people, and people who are on a mission to demonstrate what selfless service means. And that is me, and that's why I'm running for this office.
You've mentioned that you've been going around the district campaigning since this indictment has come out. Have people really mentioned this? Do you think this is going to be a factor in people's votes as they, you know, send that mail-in ballot back into the post office or go to the polls? Do you think they're thinking about this as the primary issue?
Oh, absolutely. Ever since the indictment of George Norcross, since June, I think people have been talking about it to me, unsolicited. They would bring up the topic. And, you know, my response is, you know, we can change South Jersey by choosing who is going to represent us. And I'm hoping and praying that I will be their choice. Look, I'm someone who is a veteran, who has served my country. I'm a West Point graduate. I'm a pro bono attorney. I own a business, a law firm. My wife and I have been living in Gloucester Township for 14 years, and she and I have been married for 29 years. We have 6 children who have gone through the schools here in South Jersey. So we understand the struggle. And I think it's high time that the Norcross name, which has been affiliated with, you know, a stronghold here in South Jersey politics, it's high time that we turn the page. And I think people are looking forward to usher in a new public servant who cares about integrity, who cares about character, and he cares about really just doing the right thing. I think with me, you'll find that I will answer to the people instead of the other way around.
Do you believe this makes you more likely to win? Do you think you would have had a harder time making your case to the people of the first district had it not been for this indictment?
No, I don't think so. You know, I believe that I'm an ordinary guy with extraordinary dreams, and I serve a supernatural God. You know, it is unfortunate that the people who are going to vote, the voters and the constituents of the first congressional district, that they have to even think about corruption, right? That's a shame. And, you know, I think people can connect the dots without any one person pointing out anything that they may or may not know. I think the bottom line is that people want someone to serve them. You know, look, people go to the grocery store, they see the gas prices, they see the stagnant inflation rates, they're concerned about safety, and they're concerned about our welfare and where our tax dollars are going. These are the concerns. These are the tabletop, kitchen table topics that we're talking about. And the concern that if the person in office needs to represent us and not be distracted and not be any way connected at all to corruption. And I just believe that I can win this race regardless. I have a great resume, but more than that, I have a great heart for the people.
George Norcross has been speaking out about this indictment. He says the charges are politically motivated, while the Congressman Donald Norcross hasn't really weighed in on that part of it. This is a line attack that we've seen with former President Trump on your side of the aisle, as well as by former Senator Bob Menendez on the other side in their cases. Is there any truth that these charges are politically motivated?
You know, I'm not going to, talk about whether or not these charges are politically motivated. Obviously, I had nothing to do with these charges. And so I'll leave that to the state attorney general. But this is what I will say, and that is these charges are against George Norcross. So I want to make it very, very clear that Teddy Liddell is not claiming that Donald Norcross had anything to do with these charges. But I will say that the Norcross name has been involved throughout the past long years within South Jersey with New Jersey politics. And I think that people can connect the dots. Look, here's the bottom line. I believe that people want a public servant who cares about them and want somebody who can get the job done and do it in an ethical way. That is me, and that's why I'm running. I think people are tired of seeing their tax dollars sold away just so that way companies can come in and not have to pay taxes. And the bottom line is that we're promised jobs that never came. That's not good. I think people deserve an explanation as to why that didn't happen. And so all I'm saying is that as your congressman, I will do everything in my power to keep my word and to answer to the people. That is so very important.
Let's talk about you specifically and put this race in perspective. Your area is historically a blue district. A Republican hasn't been elected to this seat since the 70s. I know you've outlined a few of the key issues there, but for someone who, you know, maybe they're not happy with the congressman, but not so inclined to vote for a Republican, or maybe it's someone who, maybe they are a Democrat and maybe they're open to something different. Why should voters cast their ballot for you in a place that hasn't gone red in a really long time?
Yeah. You know, 39 years ago, I left the state of Illinois, got on an airplane, landed in Philadelphia, and then took a bus to Fort Monmouth, New Jersey, which at the time was the home of the West Point Prep School. So I spent a year there, and then I went on to West Point, New York, to serve as a cadet at the United States Military Academy. As you know, West Point is a very, very tough place to get into. You have to have a nomination from a congressperson. You have to have great grades in high school. And most of all, you really have to want it. You really have to want to graduate from the academy at West Point. And so I'm saying this to say that service is in my DNA. And I believe that upon graduating West Point, serving in the U.S. Army as a Army officer and getting out after 6 years, meeting my wife who was in the Army, also a veteran, I got a chance to move on and get my law degree and practice pro bono work. I have been a recruiter for West Point, helping to recruit students to go to West Point. In fact, there's a high school student from Williamstown who just graduated this year from West Point. She invited me to West Point so I can pin on her second lieutenant bars. So what I'm saying is that's what service is all about. It's about giving back. It's about helping the people of the first district of New Jersey. And I believe I'm the one to do that. It is time for change. And people see that. And I am that choice.
As a Republican, you are a Trump supporter. That's the case for a lot of people in your party, considering he's the standard bearer. Your district hasn't gone for him either time he's run for president. Trump lost the district by over 30% both times. Are you worried your support for Trump may be turning off voters?
Well, this is what I'll say. You know, I am a part of the Republican Party, and I do support some of Trump's policies. But I have to be very clear. You know, this race is really about Teddy Liddell. It's about me. We have a very unique district. We have unique issues within this district. And as we just spoke about during the first 10 minutes of this call, we've been talking about politicians, and we've been talking about corruption and how things could be improved within this area. That's really the reason why I'm running in this race. And that is these are challenges that other races may not have. But that's the reason why I'm in this race, and that's the reason why I believe that I'm going to win this race, regardless of who is at the top of the ticket.
So to be clear, you're not concerned at all about the shadow that could potentially be cast by the presidential race, specifically with the former president?
This is why I'll say you use the term shadow, but if that shadow includes closing the border, if that shadow includes making sure that our economy is better in spite of the past 4 years, if that shadow is making sure that in our schools that we're not introducing gender ideology or introducing bathrooms that both men, that boys and girls can go into, if that shadow is about freedom, and if that shadow is about making sure that we have a strong military and that we're protecting our country, then I'm all about making sure that those policies get into power and those policies win out. And right now, those are the policies that Trump is supporting. So I would just like to ask people to look at what I stand for, vote for the person that's so very important, and understand that in this district, there's this added challenge of getting things done, because we currently now have to answer to the politician. With me, I will be answering to you, and I'll be your public servant. That's how I win this race.
Trump is obviously the standard bearer of the party. He's your party's nominee for president, but there are still some candidates, including those in our state, who are choosing to run without supporting him for president. For example, state senator and Republican gubernatorial candidate John Bramnick says he's going to write in someone else instead. Is there room in your party for elected leaders who don't support the former president?
You know what? I would say there's room in the Republican Party for anybody. You know, look, I'm a person who's open to new ideas. In fact, that's exactly what is needed right now in the first district of New Jersey. We need new people, new energy, new leadership, and new ideas. And so I think, yes, there is room in the Republican Party for new ideas and for people who might assume those roles in terms of leadership. So I have no problems with that at all.
And that's including people who are anti-Trump.
You know, I think that people make their own choices. For me, my choice is to make sure that our country is safe and that Americans are put first. That is what's missing right now. And I want to make sure that we support policies that go in that type of direction.
I want to talk about voter engagement. That has been a bit of conversation at the national level, and it's trickling down towards races like yours. African American voters have traditionally voted for Democrats, but this year they may be moving away from that. Polls show Vice President Harris is not getting the same support Biden did 4 years ago from Black voters. This is particularly the case among Black men. The city of Camden, which resides in your district, is home to a sizable Black population. Are you courting these voters as part of your strategy to ultimately be victorious in November?
Absolutely. Yes, I am. I was in Camden last weekend, and I plan on being in Camden almost every day for the rest of the campaign. I have been speaking to various people within Camden's city as well. But look, here's the point. You know, African-Americans and everyone else remember the economy during the Trump years. They remember the tax break that we all received. They remember the fact that they didn't have to struggle so much. And I think what's missing in this discussion is not so much it being a discussion about race, but it's a discussion about what we're all struggling with right now. You know, it's tough to pay bills. It's tough to even pay rent. I mean, let alone trying to buy a house, we're talking about paying a rent. And so I just believe that people are looking for a positive change, and they want their representatives in Congress to be a part of that solution and not be distracted. And I believe I will usher in that new energy, new leadership. People need change, and that's why I'm ready in this race.
You say you were in Camden campaigning in areas where there may not be people who would necessarily vote for a Republican, people who are traditionally Democratic. How are those voters moving? Are they moving towards your direction, or is there still more convincing to do?
Well, this is what I'll say. While there may be a little bit more convincing to do, I am seeing a lot of people express frustration, express concern, and some of them have just lost hope. And I believe that when they see a person like me who believes in the impossible, who believes that things can be different, and who is courageous enough to run and make that change, they put their support behind me. And I can tell you this, in Camden City, we will see a lot of that support during this election. So I'm excited about this campaign, and I'm excited about what's going to happen on November the 5th.
Despite Election Day being over a week away, the election's essentially already started because of mail-in voting. That's underway across the state. Your district ranks among the top three for the most amount of mail-in ballots that have been returned as of last week. Nearly half of them have already been sent back, with Democrats returning ballots at a faster rate than Republicans. How do you and your campaign read this?
Well, I discussed this with my campaign manager just the other day. And the one thing that we noticed is that the overall totals, the numbers of these early ballots are a bit lower than they were 4 years ago, but then certainly, you know, 2 years ago. So I believe that in terms of voters for, for my party, I believe that more will continue to come in. And I think also even more as we get closer to the election day and on the election day, we'll even have more votes come in. Look, I'm excited about this campaign. And it's not just, you know, Republicans versus, you know, Democrats or those who are undeclared or independents. It's about everyone. My campaign is open door to everyone. And I believe anyone out there who wants to see change in South Jersey, they will vote for me because they're sick and tired of what's been going on for the past 10 to 20 years in South Jersey, and they want change. And that's why I'm running. And I ask everyone to check out my website, Teddy Liddell for Congress. Join my campaign, support me, and please, I need your vote.
Early voting starts this weekend here in New Jersey. What are you doing to get voters to the polls?
Wow, I'm doing so much. Well, number one, right now I am on streaming video with all the shows like Peacock and HBO Max and other shows. I will have my ads out on TV very, very soon. I'm going to have ads out on the billboards as well. And on top of that, I am sending out emails and as well as text messages as well to many, many different people. So we have getting the word out. We're knocking on doors. I have a great group of volunteers. We aim to win this election, and I'm excited about it.
Is your campaign's goal to get most of your voters or at least a sizable chunk out before election day, or are you mainly relying on election day turn? I mean, obviously, I know you're trying to get as many votes as you can, and you're trying to get mail-in voting and early voting to happen. But what is the main focus here? Is election day really going to be a make or break for you?
I think the main focus is to win this election. That's the main focus in this campaign. And the way we do that is we go out there and vote, and then we bring people with us to vote, whether that be early voting, whether that be vote by mail, or on election day. We're going to do it all. Our election is focusing on every single opportunity to win this race. I tell people when I talk to them, look, not only just bring yourself, but bring 10 people with you. That's how we'll win. Look, I think that everyone knows that there's a 2-to-1, maybe 3-to-1 advantage in terms of registered voters, Democrats versus Republicans. So we do need the numbers. And so everyone who hears this episode, this recording, please, vote for me, but bring 10 people with you and we'll win this race.
I know we're running low on time here, but I want to get to a couple more issues here. In light of Israel murdering the mastermind of the October 7th attacks, Yahya Sinwar, the Jewish state says there won't be a ceasefire until the hostages are released. Hamas says they won't release the hostages until there's a ceasefire and the IDF withdraws troops from Gaza. How can tensions be brought down in the Middle East?
You know, this is a tough question. And I can tell you that, if this happened in the United States, on land in the United States, who knows? Americans would have the same passion about making sure that hostages do come home. You know, this concern that hostages are not returned is a big, big, big issue. You know, these are family members, their husbands, their daughters, their sons, their brothers and sisters. And what's very sad and horrible is that some of these hostages have been allowed to actually die or were killed while in captivity. And so the concern I have is, yeah, these hostages do need to be returned. And I think from day one, from ever since Israel was attacked on October the 7th, you know, and, you know, over 1,200 people killed and then hostages taken, I think the bottom line is that that would be a great first step to bringing some sort of ceasefire. And I think that's where I stand.
The U.S. recently sent the THAAD system to Israel along with troops to operate it. This comes after sending a small number of troops to the region just a few weeks ago. How involved should the U.S. be in this conflict?
Well, the United States has always been and will always continue to be a supporter of Israel. In fact, the United States is the number one supporter of Israel, and I support that position. I can also tell you that the THAAD system is a very, very powerful system. In the U.S. Army, I work with the Patriot systems, and so I do understand a little bit about these types of systems. They're very, very powerful and very, very effective in terms of protecting the country. So, I support the United States position in terms of supporting Israel.
Let's talk about taxes here. A big issue for New Jersey voters is the state and local tax deduction. Under current tax law, property owners can only deduct a maximum of $10,000 in their federal filings. If elected, would you work to reinstate SALT in its entirety?
Yes, I would work look at that law and to rework that law. But, you know, let me just say this about taxes. I think, New Jersey has a long history with the use of taxpayers' monies. And I got to tell you, one of the reasons why I'm running is because I don't think that taxpayers like us are happy about the fact that our tax dollars are being used to, you know, attract companies into our state. And we're promised that they're going to, you know, create more jobs, and that never happens. One of the problems with these types of, you know, deals is that there's no oversight. And that's what happened with the Economic Opportunity Act of 2013, and it should never happen again. Thousands and thousands of jobs were promised to Camden City, and they did not appear. And I say shame, shame, shame. And that's why I'm running. It's not fair to the people of Camden City, and it's not fair to the taxpayers in the first congressional district of New Jersey. And that's why I think there should be total tax reform, where there's oversight. If this is allowed to happen, there's going to be oversight that, yes, indeed, those jobs will indeed come if promised.
You said you would work to reform this initiative. Does that mean you would reinstate it in its entirety, that SALT would be back to the way it was before the tax reform bill that was passed back in 2017?
No, it doesn't mean that. It just means that I will work to make the law so that way people will see that we're trying to make it, make the law so it actually is better for the people. So, you know, and what that means to me is that we need to look at all new ideas on the table. And so sometimes that doesn't mean always go back to where it was, but we might be able to improve this law by looking at other, you know, new ideas. But I do believe that taxpayers ought to have a say about where their money goes and how it's used, especially here in New Jersey.
Real quickly here, both Donald Trump and Vice President Harris have come out in favor of no taxes on tips, specifically in regards to those made by hospitality and service workers. Chances are, if you're elected to the House, you will have to face some form of legislation that has this proposal in it. Would you vote for that bill?
Absolutely. I think that we have some very, very hard workers in these types of industries. And I think that we definitely need to support them in every way that we can. And so, yes, I support no tax on tips and all the other proposals that have been discussed so far. Absolutely.
All right, well, we'll have to see where that goes, as well as your race. New Jersey 1st District Republican Congressional candidate Teddy Liddell, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I ask everyone to go to my website, Teddy Liddell for Congress. I appreciate your support. Please vote for me and bring that plus 10. Thank you so much.
We have also reached out to Congressman Norcross's office, as well as his campaign, and we have not gotten a single response in regards to having him on the show. We would love to have the congressman on the show, as we like to get all perspectives here on this show. We will keep you updated, and we hope that the congressman will reply at his earliest convenience. Thank you so much for listening. It has been a pleasure. We'll be back again next week with more In the Middle, right here on Fox Sports, New Jersey.